No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary. Based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, from Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I fake a smile November until opening day. Suffering baseball.
Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Benny and the Bets podcast covering Boston Red Sox, ALDS, and now ALCS baseball. For everyone staying up late tonight on Periscope, this podcast can be found shortly after the conclusion of this broadcast on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, Spreaker, Player FM, Stitcher, and wherever you can find it on Google. Red Sox just wrapped up what ended up being a four-game set against the New York Yankees, taking it 3-1. I am Terry Cushman, and I will be joined momentarily by Jeremy Schilling. Before the show gets started today, we just want you to check out these, if I can lift it up high enough, these FTY t-shirts. And if you're wondering what this stands for, fuck the Yankees. And we are going to be giving away a free one to anybody who, to one person, who retweets this Periscope window. So if you want to hit a free t-shirt here, retweet this Periscope box. They also have visors as well as hats, hooded sweatshirts, but a t-shirt will be given away, and that will be chosen the winner tomorrow morning. And in the text up above this box, their website can be found. I encourage everybody to check it out. They have some really unique gear. If you hate the Yankees, doesn't matter if you're a Sox fan, hating the Yankees is universal. So I think that's gear that 99% of this league could wear. So check them out. Jeremy Schilling, how are you?
I'm good, Terry, and remind me to give you my size after the show.
There will be no rigging of the contest.
All right, fine.
Some people were saying Kimbrel was on the Yankees payroll, speaking of rigging.
Felt like it.
Yeah. Not that
felt like it there for a minute.
Not that I believe that, but Yankee Stadium is his house of horrors, and luckily, he figures it out, and unlike another pitcher on the Red Sox staff who I'll try not to bash too much tonight, but we might have to discuss him briefly heading into the next series. What's your heart rate right now?
It's getting back to normal, Terry. During the Sanchez fly ball, I took a picture of my Fitbit. It was at 122. So that's a problem. I'm not going to lie to you. That's probably unhealthy, an unhealthy situation. I'm back down to 79. I'm doing a lot better.
Well, we're happy to have you back down at a normal heart rate. I don't know what mine was. I figure, you know, I'm going to die sometime. May as well be during the ninth inning with Craig Kimbrell on the mound. But, all right, so... what were your thoughts?
You know, Terry, as a fully functioning adult, it I shouldn't care about a game as much as I do. And I say to myself, like, it's just a game and, like, you know, it is what it is. And during that whole inning, I'm saying, like, even if he does give up the game winner here, we got to go back to Boston. The series isn't over. But in practicality, you know, I couldn't sit in my chair. I was all over the place. My heart rate was, like I just said, out of control. It's amazing how much I care, how much I ride on every single pitch. And when it's happening, I absolutely hate it, and I don't enjoy it whatsoever. Like, I don't enjoy it even the littlest bit. But once it's over, it's just, this is the best feeling to have another series, to have another chance at the World Series. Now that it's done and the Yankees are dispatched, I just couldn't be happier.
Yeah, and, you know, I was having similar thoughts, you know, running scenarios through my head. You know, I try not to panic, and I try to have an A, B, and C, you know, game plan in my head. And obviously, as a spectator, I'm completely powerless. But in every other aspect of my life, I try not to panic, and I try to move to the next scenario, and I'm like, you know, Sale pitched one inning. He'll start, you know, he should be fine with the off day tomorrow. And but even with knowing he's going to start that game, it would have been an extremely agonizing 48 hours up until the start of that game. And I'm just glad I don't have to live through that, you know. We're there, and like I said in one of my last tweets, you know, the John Farrell curse is over, and it is a new era. And we'll get into the Astros and what we think might or might not happen towards the end, but I'm just happy to be there at this point.
Yeah, and I mean, I am too. I said the same thing privately, that we're finally rid of the Fire Farrell era of the Boston Red Sox. For whatever reason, and we've touched on it numerous times, this team performed differently under that manager, and key guys just tightened up and couldn't get it done. And tonight, in the ninth inning, it almost seems like a pretty sound metaphor, where Kimbrel comes out and is tight, promptly throws four straight balls that, I mean, are not even close. And it's almost like, oh my God, it's happening again. But under this guy, under this manager, and you can just see the way he watches a game and manages a game, that he's just utterly relaxed and confident in his roster. And Kimbrel wasn't obviously great. I mean, maybe the understatement of the day, but it was just a microcosm of, although he was tight early, he found a way to get key outs and ultimately give the Red Sox, you know, the necessary pitches to advance. So it's a microcosm of getting past the Fire Farrell era. I just think Cora is and we're going to get to the moves and the lineup changes, and it seems like everything he did turned to gold. You and I and all the other people you have on this podcast have constantly questioned, for example, no Holt tonight. Well, Kinsler hits the key double, has a couple plays defensively that he makes look easy, and there's really nothing to criticize him. And I don't think this, but I think we might hear a little bit of the Sale was so dominant in the eighth, let him pitch the ninth. I don't subscribe to that, but I mean, that may be the one thing we hear going out of today and into tomorrow and towards the ALCS. So couldn't be happier. Like I said, more relieved than anything else.
I think with that situation specifically, he's just afraid to not use him. Like, he's afraid to snub and disrespect his closer, and it's almost like a vote of no confidence, and it would be bad optics. And it in his mind, and maybe, you know, everyone else, I knew he was, I knew Kimbrel was coming out, whether I liked it or not, and I knew he wasn't good in Yankee Stadium, and I knew Sale would probably go out there and get those outs, and it is what it is.
Well, so here's the situation with that. One is, he's been your guy all year long, and there are times to deviate from your normal way of managing your roster. I don't think going away from your closer there is the right move. It was the right move, but I didn't have, like, it didn't pass the eye test. But with that said, if you bring Sale out in the ninth, and let's say he gets trapped in the inning, and he's at another 15 pitches, and now, so he threw 14. So let's say he's at 29, 30 pitches. You now have to pull him and put Kimbrel in with men on base, and we know Kimbrel has control problems. Then you also are jeopardizing Sale's ability to pitch if we do have to go pitch a game five. So I understand that people are going to complain about it. I just frankly think that it was the clear-cut 100% right move, that if Kimbrel actually came out and threw some strikes, we may never have to talk about it. But because he struggled so mightily and in such a key situation, it's going to be a topic of conversation. But that doesn't change the fact, in my mind, that Cora, like everything he did in this series, that was the right move.
Yeah, I mean, game 162 in 2016 was at Yankee Stadium, and then Kimbrel gave up, I don't know if it was a grand slam, but it was definitely a walk-off. He gave it up to Mark Teixeira, and that's how that season ended at Yankee Stadium, and that kind of started a little bit of a trend for Kimbrel, and that postseason was meaningless. I don't think the bullpen ever had a lead in the three games we were swept, so we didn't get to see him there, and we know how last postseason ended, and he showed some real tenacity at, I think it was the end of game one, wasn't it, of this ALDS? He had a really high pressure ninth inning and kept it together pretty well. And so I was kind of hoping he could just kind of build off of that. And, I don't know if you want to call this a success tonight or a bad outing or whatever, but we got through it. And, we'll see if he takes any criticism, but I think he had to stick by his guy there, and that's what he did, whether we like it or not.
Well, Terry, this is going to be one of those more rare moments when you and I agree.
Okay.
I'm going to tell you this. Okay, he struggled. He did not obviously have his stuff. I mean, he had his D+ stuff at best.
It was nerves, though.
He still got the three outs. I mean, you know how easy it would have been for him to pipe a fastball to Sanchez, for him to line in the gap and then to go back to Boston? But he didn't do that. He made some quality pitches. The pitch to end the game was never going to end at a base hit. You know, that was a good pitch. You could maybe say Sanchez on the fly ball to Benintendi maybe missed that pitch a little bit. But it's so easy, and you see it all the time, where guys that struggle never find enough to get out of an inning, and I give Kimbrel a ton of credit to get out of that inning, despite the fact that whether it was by nerves or stuff, he didn't clearly have it.
It was nerves. I mean, he walked the first guy. He almost hit Didi, and then he did hit Neil Walker. It was nerves for me. But anyway, let's go back to the beginning of the game, because there was a bit of a frenzy, and of course I didn't help it any. As people reacted to the lineup, a lot of people really wanted Brock Holt in the lineup tonight. I mean, I guess I preferred him over Nunez, even if I mean, Nunez wasn't really hitting either. He did have a couple of hits tonight, so I guess it worked out. But even just for the defense of Holt, I would have kept him in there because Sabathia was going to have to come out eventually. And more likely than not, it was going to be early, and it was early. And other than Britton being in there a couple innings, I would have preferred Holt. And I definitely would have preferred him late in the game once Nunez took that last at-bat. So that wasn't my biggest thing. We'll get to my biggest thing, but that worked out. And there was also an opportunity to put Holt in instead of Kinsler. I might have done that as well, but Kinsler was 3-for-9 career on Sabathia. I don't know how recent any of that was, but I still would have leaned towards Holt. But that wasn't my big thing. But what was your reaction to that specifically?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not necessarily a Holt, bandwagon guy. I think he has a role in this team. I think the key to his role is his versatility and his ability to come in into a middle of a game and make a difference, make an impact. So I wasn't necessarily, I didn't feel the need to take a position. I just thought it was odd that they made the move to Vasquez clearly for offensive purposes, like you said, because Leon is Porcello's guy. So they went and changed the battery mate, which is, probably the biggest thing you can do to affect a game for offense and Vasquez. It's not like it's a great upgrade. It's a moderate upgrade, but it's an upgrade. So you do that and you affect Porcello's ability to pitch to the guy he feels the most comfortable with, but then you don't put Holt in the lineup who's your hottest hitter. So, like I said, I didn't necessarily hate it. I didn't really take a position against it before the game. I just thought it was odd that they made the move at catcher for offense, but they didn't make that same move with Holt.
Yeah.
Ultimately, Nunez actually played good defense tonight. I mean, it's almost ironic that he makes the slow roller play to win the game and send us to the ALCS, because he'd been so bad in his last start. And Cora has such a – obviously, all right, no one can say at this point that Cora doesn't have the pulse of this team and know what's best for this team. I mean, during the broadcast, and who knows what, where they got the information, but they said he texted Kinsler last night at the hotel and said, "You're our guy tomorrow at second base." So he was decisive. He knew what he felt was best. And then Kinsler goes out and gets the big hit. So I know it's cliche to say with the Patriots and Bill we trust, or with the Celtics, it's like, all right, well, Danny Ainge knows what he's doing, so how can we really, criticize him? And I'm kind of getting to that point with Cora in this postseason where everything he touches turns to gold. But at the end of the day, I just frankly thought it was odd that he went Vasquez but not Holt.
Yeah, I gotta have a love-hate relationship with him, and today it was a lot of hate. But, if Holt doesn't hit that cycle last night, whether you want to call it legitimate or not, where the home run was off Romine, I call it legit, but that's the only reason it was really notable that he was not in the lineup. And you say you're not really a Holt guy. I wasn't a Holt guy until recently. He does go on that disgusting run every year where he's hitting 400 for 3 weeks or so, but he always falls off. Like, he's not built to play 162 games. He is a utility guy, and he's probably more optimal at 100 to 110 games per season. And I thought Alex Cora really managed him perfectly all season. I mean, he had those two games off the bench where he hit those clutch go-ahead home runs, and he's just playing really well, and I give Cora a lot of credit for that. And it surprised me he wasn't going to be in the lineup. And like I said, I really would have preferred him as the defensive replacement late in the game. And you talk about that last play where you're just waiting for Nunez to screw it up. And we were talking, off the air a little while ago, and I told you, I couldn't even look. I turned my head away because I'm waiting for that ball to sail into the fence or into the seats. And luckily, you know, that didn't happen. And all's well that ends well. But I didn't like that. The one thing I did not like was the Vasquez move, because he hasn't caught Kimbrel, he hasn't caught Porcello since spring training. Sandy Leon is Rick Porcello's guy, and Rick Porcello does not win the Cy Young without Sandy Leon. He had Vasquez and Ryan Hannigan catching him the first 2.5 months through the 2016 season. His ERA was over 4 for that 2.5 months. Pairs him up with Leon, and you know, the rest is history as far as that season goes. He wins the Cy Young. That's something I just don't want to mess with. There's always a calmness, you know, when Sandy's the catcher, and he made some killer defensive plays in game one, especially when the bullpen came in, because Barnes kept spiking him into the dirt, and I think somebody else was, and he's got a better arm at this point. His velocity is like 7 or 8 miles an hour higher than Christian Vasquez. So at this point, he's as good, if not better, than Christian Vasquez is defensively, in my opinion. Is he going to hit? Probably not. But I don't mess with chemistry there. And Vasquez, you know, it for 4 innings, it worked brilliantly. You know, they cruised through it. And I was thinking, wow, geez, you know, Porcello, even with Vasquez, might go 8 innings tonight. I mean, he got through, he got into the fifth in under 50 pitches, and then before you knew it, it was 70 something pitches, and it just started to unravel that third time through. And you go back to, like I was saying earlier, the recent start, August 3rd. 9 innings, 1 hit, which ended up being a solo home run by Gregorius. And you can say, oh, Judge wasn't in that lineup, and Sanchez wasn't, but Judge was really a non-factor tonight with Porcello, and Sanchez, I think, did hit a double, which wasn't of any real consequence. But and then in April, he went 7 innings scoreless. So this is a lineup. It's a do-or-die free swinging, home run hitting, launch angle lineup, and he seems to hit his spots really well, keeps the ball up in the zone, and I mean, this game could have been a lot less stressful, you know, had he gone at least one more inning. It would have changed the whole dynamic of the game, and I just didn't think it was necessary to put Vasquez in there.
All right, so to just compartmentalize your commentary there, and to put a button on Holt. I don't hate Holt. All right. I'm just not the type of guy who's pining for the backup quarterback. Right. So there's that fan that's always like, you know, the backup quarterback, or, you know, the utility guy that is good in that role. So they want to see him every day. I just don't need to see Holt every day. In the playoffs, I do think that you ride your hot bat. So I mentioned how Kimbrel has been pitching the ninth. He's your closer. He's your guy. In that circumstance, he stays your guy. But in the playoffs, you ride your hot bats. And I just found it odd that he did it with Vasquez, but not Holt, especially where Holt is actually a defensive upgrade over Nunez. He's not a defensive upgrade over Kinsler. So I just found it odd. I didn't hate the move. Again, I felt like Cora was going to make the right decision. So while I was questioning the Vasquez move and not the Holt move, I didn't necessarily hate it. And ultimately, I think I was proven right, because, you know, Kinsler got a big hit. Nunez played well. So, you know, it just is what it is. With regards to Holt, obviously they didn't have a need for him late in the game, and he's never going to play defensively for Kinsler, so he didn't play tonight. It didn't hurt him. I mean, unless he was going to hit 3 bombs, it just didn't hurt him. To get to the Vasquez-Leon situation, I fundamentally just disagree with this whole battery mate bullshit. All right, and we've talked, you know, and I've come out pretty strong about, are you hurt or are you injured? Because if you're hurt and you can pitch and you can get outs, I don't care, you know. And I don't care if David Price is a good guy. I just want him to get outs, right? And I don't care if Leon gives you the warm and comfy feeling before you pitch. If what's best for the team is that Vasquez is catching, then that's what's best for the fucking team. I don't want to hear that Leon gives you the warm and fuzzies. I don't give a fuck. You're a professional athlete. Like, get over that happy horseshit. And it's the pussification of the professional. It just pisses me off to no end. There's absolutely no question tonight that Vasquez was the better option. Okay, timely hitting, and then by the way, the proof is in the pudding because the guy hits a fucking home run to right field tonight. And I know it's a Yankee Stadium home run, but it's a home run, and ultimately that was the winning run because they won a run one game. So look, I just have no use for it. Okay, now. Leon in 16 when Porcello won the Cy Young. Leon was hitting like 420 for 60 days. It was unbelievable. All right, and you know, fine. And he won a Cy Young. It's still the guy throwing the ball, and I just don't buy into this mantra of like the guy catching it has any say, because Porcello will shake a guy off. All right, and he'll throw what he wants to throw. And by the way, for the first four innings today, for whatever reason, Vasquez was able to help Porcello survive the first four innings. And then, by the way, I don't think it has anything to do with the way he received the ball or called the game. Porcello stopped making pitches in the fifth. He wasn't as sharp. And I give Cora a lot of credit for not trying to seek another inning out of a guy, frankly, that just... You know, it's a big game, and in the regular season, there's no question he comes out for the sixth. But in this situation, and by the way, he knew that he was going to go to Sale. We didn't know that. So he knew he was going to get an inning out of Sale. And you could bring a guy in when it's 4-1 in a lower leverage situation where you bring him in the sixth, he gives up a run, and now the bullpen's pitching in an immediate high leverage situation. So I don't have any issue with the way it was handled, and just so there's, you know, it's pretty clear. I think Leon stinks. So, and I don't think he's better than Vasquez defensively. You said 6 or 7 miles per hour on his velocity. I'd like to see that. You know, I'd like to see that in some sort of, you know, some information that backs that up, because Vasquez has quicker feet. I think, frankly, that he makes plays look easier, so he doesn't get the same amount of credit. And Leon, to his credit, did look awesome. And Barnes sucked in that game, and so did the rest of the bullpen. And he was making plays, you know, Odell Beckham style, where he was just diving all over the place, making plays he shouldn't have made. You know, Vasquez made a stop. I think it was against Sanchez on a slider away. And that pitch was not close. And Vasquez moved his feet and blocked it, and the ball was literally blocked right in front of his throwing hand. And I just remember watching that going, wow, did he make that look easy? And not only did he make it look easy, but he put the ball like where he knew he could go grab it and throw it if he had to. So it's not – I don't understand the Leon infatuation with the pitching staff. Obviously, I'm not in the clubhouse. I'm not a player. I get it. And there's some – you know, maybe he just calls a better game and he's more in tune with what they want to throw on a pitch-to-pitch basis. But, like, I'm sorry, Vasquez is, at least for now, and this is subject to a game-by-game analysis, at least for now, Vasquez is what's best for the Boston Red Sox to win games in the 2018 playoff run.
Well, like you said, I mean, we're universes apart here, and I do have the numbers of the velocity up here, and I'll get to that right at the very end. But David Price sucked until... Sandy Leon took over for him, and Chris Sale has gone on record saying, I have full confidence in Sandy Leon, and I'm going to throw whatever he calls. He's never, ever one time shaken off Sandy Leon. He says, I can get batters out with any pitch Sandy Leon calls. Rick Porcello, been in the pros since 2008, says he's the greatest game caller of all time. So I don't really care what our comfort zones is. What's important to me is that the pitchers on the mound are comfortable, and the stats and the trends support that. So, and they want.
So why have? Okay, and one reason why I love coming on this podcast is because you and I can disagree. So what I, first of all, Sale looked pretty good with Vasquez tonight. They did not feel the need to go to Leon in the eighth inning. So you know, and I get that, and I did play baseball, but I didn't pitch, so I don't understand that battery mate relationship, and I'll admit that to you, and I probably undervalue that. It just, the Red Sox committed to Vasquez for 3 years in the offseason. They have not committed to Leon, so it just there's some. Something I don't get, and I'll admit that it's most likely me. There's something I don't get about the value of Vasquez versus Leon.
Well, it's they've been riding the hot hand. I mean, coming out of the 2016 season, Sandy Leon was the catcher, but guess what? Christian Vasquez swung a good bat last year, hit well over 300 for most of the year, and then the average came back down to earth. It was 270, 280 something at the end, but and a lot of it wasn't for power. A lot of it was bloop, you know, singles to the outfield, but whatever, they were hits. He got on base, so they committed to him, and I wasn't really against it. I wasn't really against it at the time, but guess what? This year he falls on his face. Sandy Leon reemerges, you know, as a good, you know, battery mate, as you like to call it, and he won the job for most of the year. He was catching 3 out of 5 starts, and then there was this disgusting streak that started sometime in late June, carried through August sometime, where the Red Sox won, I don't know how many straight, it was in the 20s, I think, games in a row, or maybe it was like 18 out of 20, something like that. Games where Sandy was the catcher, and whenever Vasquez came in, they didn't win, and it might have had nothing to do with him necessarily, but for some reason it was working out with Sandy, and it was just a weird situation.
I remember it being Vasquez's spot until he broke his hand, and maybe I'm revising history a little bit, and so I'll admit that I'm not immediately recalling, you know, who had the last run of starts up until that hand injury or finger injury. But I, you know, and there's a reason why Cora went to him in the last 2 days, despite the fact that Porcello does prefer Leon.
He wanted offense. That was what it was. Yeah. But I didn't value it the same way that Cora did. I'm a chemistry guy, and the proof is in the pudding. So here we go with the velocity thing, just so I can get rid of it. Sandy Leon, 82.2 miles an hour, and that's lower than what I remember it. But so he's ninth overall in the league among catchers. So let's find Vasquez.
And while you're looking for that,
who's apparently,
I will just say the more important stat is the pop time.
That's on the here pop. Too. Okay, yeah, let's go with the pop time. All right, so that still puts Sandy ninth overall. Hang on, let me see. So 1.97 seconds, I'm assuming, is what that is. Yep. And let's see. Vasquez is just way down. I'm not even seeing him. I wonder if it just came down to number of games. Yeah, he's not even in the top 49.
Maybe he didn't qualify because of the injury.
He was the lowest on the team. And Swihart was even higher.
Let's not, because I've come out strong with Vasquez, let me take a step back, because I don't want to understate Leon. Leon obviously has a role in this team, and I'm not sitting here saying he shouldn't be a Red Sox or he shouldn't be on the 25-man roster. That's not what I'm saying. I just think Vasquez is more athletic, better offensively, and I mean, the Red Sox, I think, feel the same way, because, again, they've committed to him and they haven't committed to Leon, and they love Swihart. I mean, that whole thing with the agent in the middle of the year, they chose Swihart specifically over other roster positions And I think there's a reason for that. We're getting more outside of the ALCS and the ALDS and more into like general Red Sox roster moves. But like I feel like Leon isn't long for this team. I think they're poised to go with Swihart and Vasquez. So, you know, I do like Leon. I said two nights ago or three nights ago I thought he was awesome in game one, but I feel like Vasquez gives them the better chance. And that and the whole point comes down to why are you going to go with Vasquez for offense and not Holt? So, you know, but I think we pretty much hammered that home. Unless you have anything else, I say let's move on to the next topic.
Leon's not a free agent until 2021, so there shouldn't really need to be any urgency there. And
what's the money on him? Do you have it?
Well, he's not arbitration eligible until next year. He made $2 million this year, $1.950 million.
Different. So he will be here.
Well, I mean, you figure Sale's here next year, Porcello's here next year. So, I mean, he's here for as long as they're here, basically. And, you know, and then who knows what happens after that. And Swihart really is the best offensive option. I mean, they're not going to go to him in the playoffs, not having him, you know, caught all year long. But his defense seemed to be getting a little better. And, you know, so who knows? I mean, he could be a future catcher on this team. They held on to him for a reason. So, so who knows? I mean, like I said, it's year to year. I mean, maybe Vasquez has a 2017 type year next year, and now he's catching 3 out of every 5. You know, it all depends. But like you said, we know where we stand on that, so we'll just move on.
The one thing I wanted to talk about, Terry, is Sale coming out and getting 3 outs and 14 pitches tonight in the 8th inning. We talked about some of the concerns with his shoulder last time I was on your podcast. To me, not only the fact that the Sox were willing to do it, but the way he performed tonight really, really lowers my blood pressure with what I expect from him in the ALCS. Now we get him in game one, so we can see him 3 times if we have to in the ALCS. I don't know if you feel differently, but I that did give me the warm and fuzzies, seeing him, one, get up, get in the game, and then perform the way he did. I think he's healthy. I think he's ready to dominate. And I'll tell you right now, there's no chance we beat the Astros without him probably winning 2 games and maybe having a role in a 3rd.
Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. And let me just touch on a couple of things, and then we can talk about the Astros specifically. I was concerned about his health before the first game. When his velocity went up to 95, I kind of backed off of the health concerns and just was worried about rust, you know, because he didn't have a ton of innings, you know, since he came back, and they tried to ease him in, and 40 pitches, I mean, that's not really a lot to work on some stuff, and then they elevated it to like 65, and he wasn't giving up runs, but you could tell he was laboring a little bit more in those rehab starts, and then he looked, I mean, the strikeouts were there game one, but unfortunately he came out in the 6th, didn't he? I think he went, 5 1/3, something like that?
And, yeah.
Yeah, so it was just a matter of rust, and he looked pretty dialed in today, and if that continues, you know, then I feel pretty good about it. But I'll tell you this, though. The reason why I picked the Yankees, and I haven't really eaten crow on that yet, but I obviously picked the Yankees to win in 4. And the reason why I picked them to win in 4 was because I thought Chris Sale, if healthy, could win game one. And if he just didn't give up many runs early and we put up some runs, I just figured we could probably skate through that game with a win. And that's exactly what we did. And it was dicey. Coming into Houston here, we not only need him to pitch well and to hopefully give us at least 6 innings, per start. 7 would be great, but we have to fire on all cylinders. Chris Sale himself being solid is not going to get it done against that team. Ryan Pressly, their setup man, only 2 earned runs since July 11th. And Roberto Osuna has closed very well. We do have his number, so I wouldn't be shocked to see some ninth inning heroics against him, because he was with Toronto for a few years, and there's a decent enough sample size there. But the rest of that team is so solid, and I'm not even going to make an official pick on it, because it's not going to be the Red Sox, but I think we can win. You know, and I think we match up better with them. I mean, we split the first series and then lost 2 out of 3 the second time. But Cora was kind of managing the team, you know, awkwardly, because we had a lead.
And that was one of Sale. I think that was one of Sale's initial extended spring training games, where he came out and threw like 35 or 50 pitches. So, look, here's how I look at it, Terry. Sale has to be dominant, right? And I'm not talking about 6 innings. I'm talking about dominant innings, like 6 or 7 dominant innings. So you get to the bullpen with a lead, right? It's not the innings themselves. It's when he leaves the game, what are your chances to win, right? So that's what it's more about. There's no chance we win the series if Sale isn't great. Okay, because they are great. They have the most even lineup in Major League Baseball. They are scary, 1 through 9, basically. Where we have flaws with the back half of our lineup in the bullpen, they seemingly don't. They're so deep. They have Verlander, Keuchel. They seemingly have like 3 aces. So it's Price being such a puddle and piece of shit, you don't know what you're going to get from him. But and I would like to actually talk about what you see his role to be in that series. But before we get to that, if Price can win his 2 starts, you only have to find a way to win 2 games Sale doesn't pitch in. And the way Evaldi and Porcello performed in this series gives me hope that we can find a way to win 2 non-Sale starts. So I don't necessarily pick the Red Sox to win this series, but I also don't rule out that they have a decent enough chance to win the whole thing. Now, getting back to the fact that you should eat crow on your Yankees selection, I'm all about pointing and laughing when people are really wrong and there's like no basis for it. I don't see that here. I think I told you that my prediction, which is kind of like a cop-out, was the Sox could sweep, the Yankees could sweep, and it could be any result in between. So I don't feel like you owe an explanation to Sox fans. Now, unless you were doing it to just be the contrarian, a la the Maserati, as I would call it, then you don't owe any explanation to anybody, because they have the better lineup. They had the better bullpen. And, we have David Price on our team. So, it just – I don't think you could have predicted Evaldi and Porcello being as good as they were. And, the timely hitting and the blowout win. And there were things that happened that just went across the strengths of the teams – or not across, that went counter to the strengths of the respective teams. And so for that, it went Sox in 4, which – makes me right, because I basically didn't make a prediction. It makes you wrong, but I don't know that that's, quote unquote, have to eat crow.
Yeah, I mean, people are going to give me shit, and that's totally fine, but I knew David Price was an automatic loss. I was being a little facetious when I picked 1 2/3, but I did, that was entirely possible, I thought. And
well, so possible that it actually fucking happened.
It did happen, and what really, as I said in that live stream, it was like an 8-minute live stream, but the Yankees hadn't lost a game in Yankee Stadium since the 2015 wild card. And yeah, they didn't make the playoffs in 2016, but in 2017, the Astros couldn't beat them at home. The Cleveland Indians could not beat the Yankees at home. Those were two very robust lineups, and they, you know, they beat the Twins. And then what really sold me was the wild card game against Oakland. And I know they live and die by the home runs, and they're, you know, that makes them a little easy to pitch around, but just watching that crowd and watching how Severino kind of responded to it and was just absolutely lights out, and just with all of that and then David Price, I just figured, I'm like, there's just no way we're going to be even after two games if we're lucky, and if Sale's healthy. I didn't know that 100% at the time. And then I just figured the Yankees were going to beat us in games 3 and 4, and I'm glad to be wrong. I'm glad to be wrong
about
that.
The thing you couldn't account for, and you could feel it through the TV, was the Red Sox scoring first was monumental.
Yeah, as it turned out.
That deflated not only the players, but the stadium just seemingly lost its personality, you know, just by scoring first. And you know, you hear these stats, like there's some like a 72 and, you know, whatever, 16 or some ridiculous stat when they score first or whatever it is. But it really rang true in these two games. And I hearken back to that 4-game sweep in New York. I think it was August when they were 2 games or 3 games in first place, and it really catapulted them to the lopsided, AL East lead. This team, people are seemingly losing track of it, but this team does seem special. And I'm not talking about the fact that they won 108 games, because I agree with you. I think the number of wins in the regular season is irrelevant. It's the way the roster's constructed to compete in October. But this team does have that, you know, something you can't, you know, necessarily tangibly put your finger on. They clearly care about each other. They clearly are playing for each other. And there's just something about this team that suggests that they're capable of playing above what you would expect on paper. And I thought that really shone through, you know, in the two games in Yankee Stadium and winning this series. And I know you may scoff at this because I think, you know, we just see things differently generally. But I think that's what gives them a chance against the Astros. I mean, on paper, they should lose the series. On paper, they're not as talented. But they're going to go in there thinking that they have a chance to win and that they're the better team. And I think it gives them a chance. And maybe it's a 40% chance or a 35% chance or a flip of a coin. But there's something about this team that you can't necessarily put their finger on that is factoring in this run.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not, like I said, I do feel a little bit better about this Astros series than I did the Yankees. And that's weird because, the rotation for Houston is definitely, you know, way better than New York's. And their bullpen, I don't know if it's as good as New York's, but it's good, and the lineups are good. But the thing I like to go back to is I like to kind of compare it to the 2013 postseason with, you know, we knew we were on a collision course all year long with the Tigers, and they had Verlander, who obviously, you know, was one of the best in the game, only 2 years removed from his Cy Young. They had Max Scherzer, who won the Cy Young that year, and they had Anibal Sanchez, who led the league in ERA, and then they had some monster mashers, you know, Cabrera. They had Prince Fielder, who turned out to be kind of a bust anyway in the postseason, but heading into the series,
Torii Hunter,
yeah. Victor Martinez was a very good hitter still. So I did favor Detroit going into that series, and then they beat us the first game.
I did too, by the way.
Yeah, yeah. And so I feel a little bit similar. We don't have, you know, we don't have the bullpen stability because Breslow, that was probably the best year of his career, and he was really good in the first two rounds of the postseason. And then Tozawa, very good. They always brought him in against Cabrera for whatever reason. He had his number. And then Koji had one of the best if not the best season of all time. I still don't know where that ranks. I know it was that one was better than any single season Mariano ever had with the Yankees. But it was just, you know, I had a lot more comfort in the bullpen. And, you know, Lester and Lackey aren't quite Sale and Price, you know, during the regular season, but they're two guys that could always handle October and always rose to the occasion. And Lester did kind of go on to, I think Lester's a Hall of Famer. I don't have his numbers up in front of me, but I'd be shocked if he wasn't. But yeah, but so that's kind of what I go back to. And we were the number one offense that year as well. And I just hope it's the same. And the other thing too that nobody really talks about, Alex Cora knows that Astros team inside and out. AJ Hinch doesn't know the Red Sox inside and out. So that could be an advantage. And Francona won the World Series his first year. So did Farrell. You know, there's an interesting trend there. You know, Valentine didn't, but I like to pretend that year didn't happen anyway. It was only 1 year, so. But I think we can, and like you said, we're not favored, but if the stars align, we do have home field. That, you know, we have that, so it just depends. What's Price's role going to be?
Yeah, wow, Jesus.
It should be the bullpen, right? Not that we have a great number two, but
he's gonna start a game. He's gonna at least get one start in that series. I'd be surprised if he didn't. And because, go ahead.
Well, I agree. But I don't think it's right. Is what I'm saying. He will start.
I mean, so Cora's been so right in the ALDS that I'm going to defer, and I know this is kind of like, hey, Jeremy, we're on a podcast where you're supposed to give a take, so you can't just agree with the manager. Well, I get that. But if they decide to go in the bullpen, then I'm going to agree with it. And there's going to be reasons that maybe we don't know, you know, maybe, you know, whatever it is. Maybe his hand's tingling because he started playing Fortnite again. I don't know. But he's going to get a start. And I think what they're going to do is chalk it up to the fact that now that the Yankees are out of it, they don't have to worry about that Price-Yankees mystique anymore. Now, you and I are both going to immediately jump on the fact that he just sucks balls in the playoffs. And he's not going to give you a chance. And I'm going to tell you right now, the next start, if it's a complete dud, he's done. You can't put him in anything but a middle leverage bullpen, you know, spot. You just can't. So you can make a mistake in a game seven and start him and lose and still win the series. Again, I chalk it up to the fact that if Sale wins his two starts, you got to find two wins that are in games that he doesn't start, and I think they can do that. Especially because I think obviously if it gets to, he's going to start game 1-4. Is that how it works out? 1-4.
He'll be 1-5.
And then, you know, he'll be available if they get to a game 7. He probably won't start it, but he'll, you know, he'll be in a role like he was tonight. So I just think if you can win the two Sale starts, you just got to win the two other. Evaldi's obviously going to get one of the starts. Porcello, I think, is going to get game 4. I don't know, man. The guy's $31 million. I just don't know how you don't start him. And who's going to start in a spot if he doesn't?
Yeah.
E-Rod, please.
Well, I think, like you said. Oh, go ahead. I thought you were done. Go ahead. Did I lose you?
No, well, one is your audio all of a sudden is not good, but look, we've talked about this. You think I'm a price guy, I'm not a price guy.
I don't think
I
you're a price
see
guy.
His value. I see his value in the regular season. And so I just think he has to start that game, because if you're going to win the World Series, he's going to have to be David Price at some point. If you're going to win a World Series at some point, he's going to break the streak of losses as a starting pitcher in the playoffs. And I don't think he's necessarily going to do it. I mean, any optimism I had for David Price is just absolutely gone. And if you listen to the podcast 3 nights ago, where I think I spent an hour completely eviscerating him, I'm on record about that. But I hope I'm wrong, and if I am wrong, then I think this team can still win a World Series. So, you know, I think he gets the game. I think he gets game two, and I think if he's not terrible, I think if he can find a way to pitch five meaningful innings, he gets game six. I mean, it makes my skin crawl just saying it, but if you're going to win a World Series, he's got to be a part of it. Now, if he stinks, then who do you go to? I mean, Erod has not shown that he's the answer. And I just, you know, maybe he is. I don't know. But whatever you do away from Price gives you really a difference without a distinction, in my mind.
Yeah, right as you were, you know, going through this, I was actually pulling up some numbers right now. And like you said, I think we can agree Price needs to start game two. Is my audio okay?
No, it's not.
It's not. All right, let me disconnect with you and reassess.
Now it is. We're good.
Oh, I know what my problem is. I shouldn't have been on Wi-Fi on this. But
you sound great now.
Okay. You've been clear.
Good radio there, but yeah, you sound good.
Okay, right. okay. So I have some numbers up here that I was literally just compiling. Erod, only one start against Houston, which was actually in September. 3 1/3, gave up 6 hits, 5 earned runs. I think that start was right after his brilliant start right off the DL, so he kind of crapped the bed there. That was his only start. Rick Porcello, 2 starts against Houston this year. 5 2/3 was the more recent one. He gave up 7 hits, 4 earned runs. Not great there. Earlier in the year, he went 6 1/3, gave up 5 hits, 3 runs, only 2 of them earned. So that tells me he's probably your game 3 or 4 starter. I'm pulling up Nathan Eovaldi right now, but I don't know that he...
So while you pull up the stats, this is how I handle it. I have Sale in game 1 with Porcello available in the bullpen. I have Price in game 2. I have Eovaldi in game 3, and I have Porcello in game 4. And obviously, what happens in those 4 games is going to dictate the balance of the series. But then I have Sale in game 5. Porcello will not be expected to pitch in that game, but in game 6 and 7, Porcello will be available. Game 6 goes to Price/Eovaldi. And then if it is Price, Eovaldi gets game 7 with all hands on deck, including Price, including Sale, including Porcello, and that's just how I see it. Erod will be available as probably your primary left-handed reliever all series long. I don't have any desire to see him start a game, and I don't see the upside, because in the regular season, when the leash is just frankly longer, he tops out at 5 innings, right? So I just don't need the constant falling behind in counts and the high leverage situations brought on by his own inability to throw strikes in the playoffs. And based on the ALDS, these are the 4, I mean, subject to Price, but these are the 4 guys that I think give you the best chance to win. The other reason why I feel that way is because there's no left-handed bullpen guy. I mean, Dombrowski has completely fucked this bullpen all year long. We've talked about it repeatedly. Erod, your left-handed arm in the bullpen. You can't start him. You can't, because if you start him, you can't throw him the game or two before, and you can't throw him the game or two after, assuming he actually throws 100 pitches. So, I don't, and honestly, based on the way he was using the ALDS, and there was no conversation of him starting a game, I have Erod as your left-handed bullpen arm going forward, including through the World Series, unless something changes, and again, subject to that sack of shit David Price.
Yeah, and I got the Eovaldi stats. He only had one start against Houston, and that was while he was still with Tampa. And let's see, that was his fifth start coming off of Tommy John. He went six full innings, seven hits, four earned runs. Slightly better than Erod, so I guess you do go with him, and your theory is interesting. You may as well just leave him in the pen, Erod. I don't really...
Well, who else is your left-handed... Who else is your... I got to bring up at the Astros lineup. So who else is your left-handed, you know, arm to come in and get lefties out? And again, I don't have the lineup right in front of me, but...
I don't think we have one.
Yeah, exactly. Well, yeah. So you have your concerns with his ability to pitch effectively and get through five innings, you know, without creating himself high-leverage situations because you know he's going to fall behind, you know he's going to walk guys. And then on the other side of it, it's like, well, there's no one else in the bullpen. So, I mean, you know, and I mean, despite the Sanchez home run, and I can't believe they threw him in the ninth inning last night in a 16-1 game. I think that might have been some sort of message. But I just see that's going to be his role. And again, they you know, the Red Sox publicly talked about Eovaldi in this game or Porcello in that game, and where is Price going to slot in once he fell apart. At no point did Erod come up in any of those conversations. So I just don't see that the Red Sox see that he's going to have a role beyond the bullpen moving forward.
Yeah, and I think you're right. The bad news also with Eovaldi is that in 12 starts with the Red Sox, only three of them did he pitch six full innings. So, unfortunately...
Look, you know, some people have the clutch gene. And I'm going to tell you right now, I know that they scored runs for him yesterday, but he was awesome. I mean, let's not beat around the bush. He pitched seven strong innings, and he was dominant. He was 99, 98 the whole day. He was locating. He seemed to embrace the moment. And, you know, not to make the Curt Schilling comparison, because obviously that would just be silly at this point, but at no point did I feel like he tightened up. And at no point did I feel like the moment was too big for him, especially early in the game before the Sox opened it up. And so, you know, I just don't see how Eovaldi doesn't have a big role moving forward. Now, you know, he probably won't be a Red Sox next year and all those sorts of things. And he wasn't here at the beginning of the year, and he has the health issues. But, you know, that guy walked into Yankee Stadium with the series tied, and everyone thought that the series was leaning the Yankees' way, and he shoved it. So, I mean, you know, maybe I'm wrong, you know, but I just think that he did everything you could possibly expect from a guy who's not going to let the moment get in his way.
Well, here's the bad news. In three of his 12 starts that he did go at least six full, two out of those three were against the Yankees. So he just owns that team, and, you know, we saw it again yesterday. But with that being said, he's still the best option. I'm not disagreeing. I'm just saying, you know, I'm just proceeding with caution with him, and my expectations aren't very high. But by default, he has to be the fourth guy over Erod, for sure. And so hopefully he can rise to the occasion.
So the question becomes, Terry, and this is where it gets... And I don't have my thoughts yet, so I don't know what I'm going to say. But Sale's 1-5. Price is, I think we can agree, like begrudgingly, 2-6. Whoever starts game three is theoretically going to start game seven. So who do you want that to be? I mean, probably the safest bet is Porcello, because he has a longer track record. He's less likely to completely implode. But I mean, the way Evaldi pitched, I feel like the moment won't get in his way.
Yeah,
and you know, maybe I'm wrong. And go ahead.
It's a matter of stuff with him, is all I'm saying. I'm not going to ever question him not being able to do it, because he pitched for a few years in New York, and he's pitching on a first place team right now that's about to go in the ALDS. So I like that. It's just he throws a lot of strikes and sometimes gets hit really hard. And I guess while I'm at it, I mean, I fully agree Rick Porcello is your Game 3 starter. And Game 7, though, because you got to factor in the off days.
Hold on. You said Porcello in Game 3?
Porcello in Game 3, for sure.
So you have Evaldi in Game 4?
Yeah, I would say.
Okay.
And then Game 7, though, don't forget, I mean, if Sale pitches Game 5, there's going to be an off day the next day. And then, you know, and then obviously the Game 6 will happen. But he'll come out of the bullpen for at least an inning or two, I would say, in Game 7. I mean, Game 7, that's like the final game. Only two teams get to play that Game 7. Oh, no, excuse me, that's the ALs. So four teams get to play it. I'm thinking we're in the World Series. But still, he might come out of the I'm getting ahead of myself. He might get a couple of innings. Like, Game 7s are the most intriguing games in all of sports, really. And so, you know, Porcello.
Well, they're so unpredictable.
Yeah.
And because it's the end of the road, it's all hands on deck, except for the guy probably who pitched Game 6. So, you know, I get it. I'm a little bit surprised that you're placing Porcello ahead of Evaldi, just because of the performance in the ALDS, and maybe because Evaldi got such run support, it's skewing my opinion of it. But
true.
I mean, I think Evaldi has the bigger upside.
Yeah, I mean, Porcello's been there. I mean, it's dicey either way, I feel like. But also another thing we need to consider is, in, you know, you're saying maybe Porcello comes out of the pen in Game 1, which is entirely possible. So that could flip-flop him and Evaldi no matter what anyway. So maybe that does put him in Game 4. But here's another thing, too. To get to Game 7 against Houston, doesn't Chris Sale have to win both games to get there? Because then Evaldi has to win. Yeah, so it could go so many different ways, you know. And their rotation can be however they want it. They've been done since yesterday, and I think Game 1 is what, Saturday? Yeah, it would be Saturday.
Saturday. Yeah. The NLCS starts Friday, so, ALCS Saturday.
So Verlander's Game 1 and 5 for them. Cole is 2 and 6. Who's that leave? Maybe Morton, or who else do they have?
Verlander, Keuchel, Morton.
Oh, Keuchel. I always forget Keuchel. So he's probably your Game 3, and then Morton. Yeah, so they can set it up however they want. And I guess we can too, really. I mean, Sale will be ready.
Well, that's the key. Because we won tonight, they can set it up however the fuck they want to set it up.
Yeah.
So
it's going to be Sale, Verlander both times, and Price, Cole, I guess.
At Fenway. That's the key. At Fenway Park.
And actually, Verlander, that's not his best park, now that I think about it. He's definitely...
No, we've had some success. And by the way, to get back to the Holt thing.
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to take a stance on Holt. If Holt isn't starting, you're starting second baseman in that game, I have a problem. I mean, he has to be with the right-handers... Except for Keuchel, obviously left-handed guy, but Morton, Verlander. These are hard-throwing right-handed pitchers that Holt has the ability to have success against. And I haven't taken the step. And when we do our regular podcast this week, I'll have pulled the numbers by then. But Holt has to have a bigger role in this series. He just has to. I don't need to see Kinsler against Verlander or Morton. So that's just where I'm at. I think Holt's going to have a much, much bigger role.
So who's your third baseman then? Do you go Devers or Nunez?
Against Verlander. It has to be Devers.
Okay. All right, okay. Well, that's fine.
And I'm sorry as much as, like, Nunez is an okay player. He has, and maybe I'd like to see his war, but he stinks defensively, and he's not the same offensive player he was when we acquired him last year. He's not. He's not hitting the ball out of the ballpark. Devers gives you a chance on every swing to do something electric. And he's a terrible base runner, and he's probably not an upgrade defensively. Fine. But that guy, and it showed in that home run against Chapman last August, was it, on the 3-2 pitch he hit, you know, Oppo Taco against Chapman on 103-mile-an-hour fastball. Like, I'm sorry, but Devers has to be in there against every hard-throwing right-handed pitcher. I like Holt in that series better. I guess the third factor is what they're going to do at catching. I mean, obviously going to start Leon in game one with Sale pitching.
Yeah, and I mean, Price can't – I mean, he struggles with Vasquez, so I don't know. That'll be interesting. I'll be watching intently.
Me too. And with the three catchers, I think you might see a situation with Leon starting the games with Vasquez technically finishing them, so that you, if you get to the point where you have to also pinch hit for Vasquez, you have Swihart, although I don't think they have any interest in Swihart catching defensively late in a close game. But I think you see where Leon is, if what you're saying is true, and I technically agree that there are certain pitchers on this roster that want to throw to Leon over Vasquez. I see Leon starting games and Vasquez hitting late and then playing defensively late, and then you also have the safeguard of Swihart being your third catcher.
Yeah, and I mean. Yeah, I'm surprised he's even on the roster, really. You know, he just hasn't been active, and I like him. I like him, and I hope he has a future with us, but it's just hard to imagine. We're at an hour and 10, so I just want to make a couple more observations. I know I've bashed Cora a lot, but I did like the bullpen management today for the most part. Barnes did well. Brazier, for the second time in a row, got a clean inning, pitched very well. So I'm hoping that stays that way. I know you like to say, well, you know, they're going to come in when we need them. But based on the trends, I like him to have a clean inning, and that worked out. And then Sale was kind of a surprise. And I was thinking, like, I'm like, well, who's it going to be? Because Brazier should be the eighth inning guy. And I'm like, is it going to be Kelly? You know, and I had no idea. And then I wasn't looking
It better not be Kelly.
Yeah, no, I meant tonight as far as how it went, you know, because it went Barnes in the sixth, Brazier in the seventh. So I was just trying to figure out who it was going to be. And then I wasn't looking at my TV at the time, but I heard the announcer say, and an ominous sign in the bullpen or something like that. And I was waiting for the words David Price to get said. And I finally, slowly looked, and I'm like, it's Chris Sale. And I was like, okay, now it makes perfect sense. And then, you know, and of course we already discussed it, but I think we both wanted Sale to come out in the ninth. Didn't happen. And, you know, we almost died, but,
look, just quickly on Brazier, I give that guy a ton of credit because he sucked in game one. He sucked in game one. We talked about it on this podcast. He was tight. He was yanking fastballs. He was pulling sliders. He had no command. The moment was clearly too big for him. And like, that guy nutted up. He came back, and tonight he showed in an elimination game, he had zero fucks but getting people out. Like, I give him a ton of credit. He was a completely different guy. You know, I'm okay with him moving forward. I mean, if that's what he's going to be in the face of what was mostly a failure to come out and done and pitch the way he pitched and then motion Sanchez back in the box, like, hey, listen, you bitch, get back in the box. I'm ready to pitch.
Yeah.
Like, I'm sorry, but that to me, like, Brazier, I'll go to war with that guy any day.
Yeah, and he was pretty good that game. Nunez had a throwing error, so a runner reached, and then one other weird play happened, which put another runner on, and I think he gave up one run, but it wasn't of any consequence, and was solid there, solid tonight. That first game where he sucked, I think he was the first, he replaced Chris Sale with the runner on, and, you know, and he just, you know, he didn't have great command, and you know, that game got pretty dicey. I think at least two or three runs scored by the time he came out, and then Workman took over for him. That's what happened, and then he put a runner on and loaded the bases, and that game, this whole series took probably five years off my life.
Look, here's the way I look at it. Okay, Sale was awesome in game one. Well, not awesome, but he was good enough.
Yeah.
Brazier stunk. Barnes had some problems. We got bailed out with early offense. Brazier came back, and I've already said it. He showed some real toughness. Barnes has rebounded, and the Cora has shown some faith in him, and it's been rewarded because he's also been good. Kimbrel stunk tonight. I think that was an aberration. I don't think that's what we're going to see in Kimbrel moving forward in the ALCS. And what I've also liked to see is the fact that the starting pitchers, and I've talked about this, Terry, like, are you hurt or are you injured? Can you get people out? Are you willing to extend beyond your typical role? And this pitching staff with Sale tonight and Porcello in game one, they've shown that they're willing to step outside their comfort zone for the betterment of the team. And that, to me, that's a huge factor moving into the ALCS, where in a 7-game series, more weird shit can happen. This team has already shown that they're willing to do the odd things, to step outside of their normal roles, to step outside of their comfort zone, to do what's best for the team, and to do it successfully. And it shows some, you know, I'm more optimistic than you. I still think the Astros are likely to win the ALCS, but it shows to me that there is reason for optimism in this series.
Yeah, and that's fair enough. I don't think we're really that far off, you know, with that series.
The lineup's far off because they have a linear lineup. They are going to hit 1 through 9 better than we are. It's Mookie, it's JD, you know, whoever hits in the 3 spot. Are they going to hit enough to manufacture runs? Because the back end of this lineup stinks.
Well, if Devers and Holt are in it, I feel a whole lot better about it.
Fair.
Yeah, and fair. Steve Pierce. You know, Keuchel's the only lefty, but, I mean, he came up big tonight.
They also may not have a choice because it looks like Moreland's not healthy.
Well, he had the hamstring, and if that, you know, that takes a while. You know, that's a bad injury because it's just nagging and, you know, people don't recover through it quickly. And then he did have the knee thing when he slid into that bolt or whatever that was sticking out of the cement. Yeah, one other thing on David Price, another observation I made today. I was listening to Alex Cora's interview on WEI because, you know, it's always on like 10 minutes before first pitch. And they asked him, Joe Castiglione asked him, you know, any chance we see Price tonight? And he didn't want to say no. He's like, maybe. But he goes, well, Kimbrel hasn't pitched in a few days. And, you know, Brazier's been doing pretty good. And Barnes hasn't been in there. And it just sounded like he was not interested at all. So I'm just – the only thing I'm wondering there is what his confidence level is in David Price. So we'll
see. Can I provide a spoiler alert?
What's that?
Not good.
Okay. I didn't think so either. And he also referenced – Price came into his office today and says, yeah, I'm good out of the bullpen. And Cora said, he goes, yeah.
Terry, if my son came in and told me he could drive me to work today, he's 4 years old, I wouldn't have a lot of confidence in that comment.
That's true. But he might be more successful at that than Price is. I don't know. I don't know what the odds are.
Well, look, here's the thing. All right. And in fairness, I think I cut you off there, so I apologize for that. But it's not the Yankees. No. So I have 2% optimism out of a scale of 0 to 1,000. I have a 2% optimism, you know. But it's not the Yankees.
I was there and in 2015. So
maybe he has a chance against the Astros. I doubt it, but.
No, I don't think so. Like I said, I knew he was going to be a fraud from the day we signed him. I mean, he was terrible with Toronto a few weeks before we signed him, and we won the 2013 World Series in part because David Price handed us Game 2 of the ALDS, gave us a 2-0 lead, so we didn't really have to sweat that round out for the most part before Detroit. And I hope he opts out. We'll fight about that on another episode. But I think we got what we need. We're both happy. We're gonna cover at least 4 more games here. So we'll see what happens. We'll do another show maybe Thursday or Friday with a little bit more organization. Sound good?
All right, Terry. I appreciate it. You know, thanks for having me as always. I really do appreciate. I do enjoy doing these with you.
This is the best show I think I've ever done. So I love it. Have a good night.
Good night, Terry.
All right, I am gonna get this uploaded to all those apps and then head to bed if I can sleep, because. Whew, thought there was going to be a game 5 on Thursday, and luckily not. So thanks again for tuning in. Also, retweet this Periscope. You can still win. I'll show it off again. I don't know how many of you are still with me, but if you retweet this Periscope here, you could win this shirt. One person will. So go ahead, give it a retweet, and maybe you'll win it. Actually, it won't necessarily be this one. You'll get to pick which shirt, which color, which style. So do that, and check out all the stuff that they have on the link at the top of this box. Have a good night, everyone.
It's a kind of a family. Wherever I roam, a Fenway home, that's where I long to be. I'm a member of a Red Sox nation. It's a kind of insanity. Yeah, I live and die with Red Sox pride for eternity. I sleepwalk through the days when there's a West Coast swing. Married to the TV and the radio. For tickets in October, I'd give
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $300 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $300 into something bigger when you bet on money lines, spread, totals, player props.
$300 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365.
Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. TNCs apply, in-app only.